Well, yesterday we were invited to a family member's home for Easter dinner, and one of the desserts yesterday was rhubarb pie with some vanilla ice cream, and it was wonderful as always. And I thought about today's guest as I was eating some of that rhubarb pie, because the cookbook that Kim Otey's put together called Rhubarb Renaissance has some pie in it, but it also has a lot of other things I never associated with rhubarb, and maybe you haven't either. So it's going to be great to talk with Kim Otey today, a feature writer for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, a variety section, and the author of Rhubarb Renaissance. And I hope you'll join in with your questions. And are you a fan of rhubarb? What's your favorite rhubarb recipe? Do you use it in savory dishes as well as sweet dishes? Hope to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can join in there with a photo or a question or a comment. And Kim Otey is with us at Minnesota Public Radio Studios. Kim, are you there?
I am. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
I really enjoyed your book. You really caught me by surprise because I was expecting, and I mean, there are a lot of great recipes, dessert recipes in there, but you have a number of other recipes that I thought, man, I never thought about using rhubarb in this way.
We took rhubarb down the road less traveled by.
You surely did, and I'm glad you did. I chuckled at your first, right away in the beginning of the book, you talk about your first experience tasting rhubarb, not a very pleasant experience.
Well, and I suspect I'm not the first
child
that someone has played a trick on. Eat this. My cousin had lent this, stuck out this piece of rhubarb to me saying, taste it. You'll like it. And, here's this beautiful pink stalk, and it's always on a beautiful spring day, and she was my cousin, and of course I could trust her. And then I bit into it.
Yeah, it's for a young person, our taste buds aren't set very well for
No, it's so intense when you're a child, and unfortunately, I think we carry that first experience, with us throughout our lives. It's kind of how we think of broccoli. Oh, who wants broccoli? Broccoli is wonderful. Rhubarb is wonderful as a grown up.
And we usually think of it as a fruit here in the U.S.
Yes,
but it's a vegetable, you're saying.
Yeah, and I think the fruit thing comes from serving it with sugar. We sweeten fruits, and we don't necessarily sweeten vegetables. But it is botanically a vegetable, and I think once I started getting my head around the idea that rhubarb is a vegetable, it kind of opened my brain. This was not the cookbook I ever would have imagined coming up with. It was the editors at the Historical Society in Minnesota here, the press, that said, we'd like a cookbook on rhubarb, single topic book, but we'd like to pursue the savory side as well as the traditional sweet side. And my first reaction was,
what?
Rhubarb is for pie and sauce and cobbler. But I tell you, this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, when I first got the book, I just opened the book to a page and I'm looking at rhubarb quesadillas. Rhubarb quesadillas?
Yeah.
Well, you had a different name for them. I forgot.
I think I called them rhubadillas.
Rhubadillas, yeah.
Rhubarb quesadillas. Got to have a little fun.
But you're saying that rhubarb goes really well with cheese.
Well, it does. There's that tart, bite of rhubarb is a wonderful complement to the creamy richness of cheese. And I found that in several recipes. Ended up, you know, putting some cheese and rhubarb combos together that, you know, we think of fruit and cheese, and, you know, rhubarb is right up there.
Yeah. Weston Madison, hello to you. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me. I just wanted to see, rhubarb is, I think, one of my favorite foods. And there's a, you know, the classic sweet where you, you know, cook it with a little bit of water and some sugar is, you know, always good. But one of my favorites is a savory dish, and it's kind of like a bread and egg and cheese strata with basil and rhubarb.
Basil and rhubarb, yes.
And
so
and
good.
The basil and the rhubarb and cheese and egg, and it's almost like a savory rhubarb bread pudding.
Okay.
And it's amazing.
Wow, that sounds great.
That's wonderful.
And I liked your biting into the rhubarb story. It was good. one thing you should try is right after it rains, on the early season, I picked some rhubarb just last year, and I bit into it. It was the day after a rain, and it had absorbed so much water, it wasn't even really bitter. It was just sweet and crunchy.
Well, if it ever rains here, I'll have to try that.
Thanks.
I just wanted to share that. Those are rhubarb is awesome, and more people should eat it.
Thanks,
right.
Wes.
Thanks, Weston.
Thank you very much for calling. As a matter of fact, it was from China, isn't it?
It's from China, which, you know, was another surprise to me. I thought rhubarb came from South Dakota, frankly, where I grew up, because it was everywhere. But no, it's from China, Siberia, across, you know, northern steppes of Russia, very much a northern plant. And they didn't even eat it in China. It was a medicine, very, you know, full of, you know, vitamins and minerals and certain medicinal qualities. They would, you know, dry it, powder it, eat it as raw, and it was through as a medicine that it came across the Silk Road as they traveled to Europe in the 14th century. And as the trade routes became more and more open, then, you know, sugar started traveling the globe. And I contend that it was some good Norwegian homemaker who took the initiative to say, you know, if I put enough sugar on this medicinal plant, I could have something here. And that's how rhubarb became a dessert. That's my story.
Well, it's funny. We were at a trivia contest not a couple of weeks ago, my wife and I, and one of the trivia questions is, what is the pie plant?
Name
the pie plant.
Well, that's how it became known, exactly.
It is known as the pie plant, but as you point out, not only used in pies.
No. In fact, I was talking with a friend who just moved into a home in Northeast Minneapolis, and he couldn't get over the entire backyard. I mean, he said, I don't know how many rhubarb plants are back there. And I said, well, what neighborhood are you in? And he said, well, it's one of the old Ukrainian neighborhoods.
Oh.
And suddenly it was like, well,
yeah,
you just moved into, you know, the heartland of rhubarb. And I'll bet there was a fair amount of wine made in that household.
Yeah, probably, because the rhubarb wine can be pretty good. Steve and Elizabeth. Yeah, Steve and Elizabeth, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
I've got I love rhubarb. I would eat rhubarb ice cream if they'd make it. But years ago, before they tore the timbers down in Platteville, I played the theater organ there, and then I also hosted the dining room. And one of the desserts that they had on the dessert table for their Sunday brunch was like a rhubarb pudding type sauce. And there was a couple in there that both the husband and the wife were medical doctors. They were MDs. And they had their adult children with them. And the mother was eating some of this, and one of the kids asked her, what are you eating? And she said, well, it's a rhubarb sauce. And she says, it's very delicious. And then she announced to her family and to the restaurant that it was not only delicious, but it was an excellent laxative. It went ballistic.
Well, I wasn't going to bring that up, but it's true. It's true.
Rhubarb is wonderful. They said, I'm going to make a rhubarb cheesecake just to see if it could be done.
Oh, it can. Absolutely.
But,
and, you know, because, you know, as Larry mentioned, because rhubarb has so much water in it, it breaks down so quickly and easily and lovely in almost anything you put it in.
I love to put just rhubarb and some sugar in the crock pot and let it go all night, get up the next morning. Oh, you've got the most wonderful rhubarb sauce. And
and you don't need to add any water, really, or almost none.
No.
Not really. Yeah, that's true. Well, thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve.
Bye.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Because it is, 90% water, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and I'm so glad you brought that up, Larry, that, you know, looking at old recipes, I was struck by how much, you know, liquid, whether it would be, you know, water or juice or would be called for that first initial kind of breakdown.
Yeah.
And I think it's because, you know, we hear that sizzle in the pan and we kind of panic and slosh a little more, you know, liquid in. But if you can just be a little patient, be a little watchful, let that heat sizzle a bit until the rhubarb starts to let go of its own water, you're way ahead of the game. You have a much more rhubarby sauce there.
Yeah, and a better tasting sauce.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You'll get a more intense flavor out of it, I think.
Well, and that's one of the there's two foundation recipes in the book, one for sweet rhubarb and one for savory rhubarb. And it's really the first step to a lot of recipes, just as we found that roasting, you know, asparagus and Brussels sprouts and beets just intensifies the flavor. You know, give your rhubarb 20, 30 minutes of initial roasting, and it just intensifies the tartness, the rhubarbness, mellows it in certain respects.
And we'll talk some more about that with Kim Odie here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, focusing on rhubarb for the next 25 minutes or so with Kim Odie. Kim is the author of Rhubarb Renaissance. It's a wonderful cookbook with some good stories about rhubarb in it as well. But rhubarb and traditional pie-type recipes, but many, many recipes, savory recipes that I am certainly going to try, and I think you might enjoy as well. So maybe you have some questions, or maybe you have some secrets that you want to share. What do you like in your rhubarb? What do you like to do with it? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And let's go to Leo in Dodgeville next. Leo, hi. Thank you for calling.
An observation. When I first came to Wisconsin, I was coming from Los Angeles back in the early 70s, just a kid, just out of the service, and I was collecting wood stoves and things like that. I was in a whole back-to-the-land movement sort of thing, and the thing that was interesting to me, I was not in Dodgeville. I was in Montford, actually, a town of about 500, and everybody had rhubarb in their backyard. Everybody did, and it was, you know, like one of these first spring things that came up. And everybody had different types of rhubarb. That was the interesting thing to me. I mean, different types of flavors, different. There was definitely a variety, like you used to see with apples in southwest Wisconsin here. Everybody had very specific, interesting varieties. But the thing that was the most fascinating to me is that I couldn't believe how many people, and you talk to kids, and they, oh, yeah, my parents always make us have rhubarb. So they would always have a pot of rhubarb going on the stove, and you had to have some rhubarb. You know, everyone had rhubarb with every meal. They had some amount of it, and my understanding of that was that, I mean, this is again back in the early 70s, and you know, it goes back farther than that, obviously. But people would not be getting as much nutrients, minerals, I suspect, during the winter. And rhubarb, my understanding was, is a deep feeder, and so you'd be getting all these minerals that and it would be replenishing in the spring, and that's why all these kids were made to eat rhubarb, you know, every day.
Every day.
You know, and I just wondered about that. I haven't caught the whole show, so I don't know if you talked about the nutritional aspects.
What about the nutritional? Thank you very much for calling, Leah. What about the nutritional value of rhubarb?
Well, it struck me, maybe this is the original spring tonic. You just, especially, I like what Leo said about being a deeply rooted plant, you know, drawing minerals, you know, out of the soil. I know one of the things I was so surprised at how many varieties of rhubarb there are. I think the nutritional aspects, the vitamins and minerals are, you know, pretty much across the board. But we think of rhubarb as being kind of a generic plant, but there are several hundred varieties of rhubarb.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Thanks, Leo.
And some are, yeah.
Thanks a lot. And you were about to say some are...
Well, you know, and some are very red. I think some of the newer hybrids, they have really found out how to hold on to that color. I know one of the plants I have in my yard is from my grandmother's plant, and it's a little on the green side. You know, you may have to bump it up with, you know, maybe a little food gel. I'm sure that's where the tradition of putting strawberries or raspberries began, just to make it a little more appetizingly colored.
Ron from Highland called and wants to know where we can find the cookbook, where you can buy it.
Well, I hope it's in a lot of independent bookstores. It's certainly on Amazon. It's in Barnes & Noble bookstores, the Minnesota Historical Society, the MHS Press site has it available. So, you know, Google Rhubarb Renaissance. It'll pop up.
Let's talk about some of your, and by the way, let me give that number again. If you'd like to join in, 1-800-642-1234, give us a call with your questions and comments. What are some of your favorite savory recipes?
Oh, well, the thing that I just fell in love with is how well rhubarb goes with shrimp. And I think it's because of the sweetness of the shrimp and the tartness of the rhubarb. I make a recipe making a kind of a compote of rhubarb, cook it down with maybe just a little bit of maple syrup, some herbs, maybe a pinch of cayenne pepper just to make it a real savory compote. Put a spoonful of that in the middle of a wonton wrapper. Balance a shrimp on there. Wrap up the wonton. I call it shrimp in kimonos because you have to kind of wrap it up like a kimono. And then just pop that in your little hot oil in the wok for, you know, a minute or two. Just enough to cook the shrimp. And it's just this explosion of flavor in your mouth. Love it.
Whoa. It sounds so good. Yeah, and you've got creamy sauces with your
a chicken recipe.
Chicken recipe.
You cook it with a lot of rhubarb and onion. And then at the end, stir in some goat cheese. Mm-hmm. And that just cooks it down and it makes it more of a sauce. And that's wonderful over this spice-coated rhubarb. You know, I love kind of a depth of flavor. And so I like a lot of spices, a lot of herbs. And rhubarb, you know, like I said, this was an exploration for me as well. It pairs wonderfully with herbs.
Oh, there are so many good, and even rhubarb ketchup.
Rhubarb ketchup. And, you know, I was saying how my family likes it with, you know, oven fried potatoes. And I was speaking with this, with someone, and they said, oh, how about sweet potato fries with that? And I was like, oh, I'm there. I haven't tried it yet, but I just to say it out loud, sweet potato fries with rhubarb ketchup, you know it's good.
Spiced couscous with rhubarb and figs, that would be one my wife will. I'm sure she's going to go to that one.
Figs is, you know, again, there was a part of me when I started, I was tempted to make this a strawberry-free cookbook because I was just so tired of the cliche of rhubarb and strawberries. But I'm not crazy. There is a rhubarb strawberry pie in the book, but with a secret ingredient that kind of bumps it up a bit. But I found that rhubarb pairs with so many other fruits, mango, figs, bananas. You can move beyond the strawberry.
Yeah, the mango rhubarb, I thought, oh, man, that could be really good.
Well, and in a scone, it's you get the gold and the pink, and it's a nice quick bread to wake up to.
There's actually a place where I buy scones often on the weekends, and I'm thinking of taking your recipe to them because they use mango, too. And say, hey,
okay,
put some rhubarb in. Let's see how that works.
Well, and you know, so much of this process of cooking and baking, you know, people I think get locked into making it a science, and certainly there are proportions that need to be respected, and I get that. But I just have a ball experimenting in the kitchen, and rhubarb, you know, throw it in. I threw some in a loaf of banana bread batter yesterday. Well, it was great. And if I do say so myself, you know, just play with it. You know,
where do you get all your rhubarb, by the way?
Well, fortunately, I did have some still in the freezer from last season.
Mm-hmm.
It is in some grocer freezer cases. I did find some over the winter, and I'm starting to see it in the stores. I suspect it's probably getting shipped in from Washington State right now. Washington State is the nation's rhubarb capital, and most of our rhubarb off-season comes from there. But I heard that it should start appearing in the Minneapolis farmers market perhaps by the weekend.
Well, we have some in our backyard. And Lynn, you in Lake Forest, Illinois, you're wondering about if it can be picked now, correct?
Oh, yes, I am. We have a beautiful rhubarb plant that was given to us by a neighbor up the block. And I didn't have anywhere that was, shall we say, sunny and well-drained to put it. So I put it in a container, but a big container.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it's bigger than some of our small shrubs. You know? Anyway, and I think that I will try maybe in late fall or something to transplant it if that's a good time to, you know, do it.
Sure.
If I figure out a place by then. But it is beautiful, and I'm wondering if it's too early, if it hasn't developed enough yet in terms of flavor and so forth to cut it, or, you know, if it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm not so worried about the flavor developing. Is this its first year in the container?
It's second year.
Okay. When people plant a rhubarb, you know, first season, you know, the little sign will say, don't pick. Well,
okay.
How can you not? But, you know,
I did pick some last year, actually.
Okay. See, a few stalks is fine. You just don't want to over-harvest. You know,
okay.
Let those roots really dig in. Second year, you know, yeah, harvest. And you will know when you're stressing it.
Okay.
But absolutely, use that rhubarb.
It's okay to cut the more well-developed stalks at this point.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you so much. This is a wonderful show. Thank you for taking my call, and I'm looking forward to reading your book.
All right.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Well, Lynn raises a point about how big they can get.
Mm-hmm.
I had just read that the London police had recommended that people plant giant rhubarb in front of windows to ward off burglars. And I think that he was speaking of a plant with a little more abrasive foliage. It must be, you know, yet another variety. But, you know, speaking to just the size that some of these plants can become, it's a good deterrent.
Boy, Peter in New Holstein, hello.
Hi, it was a surprise today because I've got a big pot of rhubarb cooking on the stove and I've grated some orange into it and
put some
sugar, and I'm going to use it on barbecued salmon.
Oh, that sounds great.
And actually, Kim, you have a recipe involving salmon and rhubarb, do you not, in your book?
Well, I've got a recipe that you steam salmon fillets in like a little parchment paper packet, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's just showmanship.
It's yeah.
fun. But rhubarb with a little green onion, little lemon zest, because, yes, the again, the sweetness of the fish, the tartness of the rhubarb, wonderful counterpoint. There's a barbecue sauce in there that used rhubarb on salmon. That would be fabulous.
Mm.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, Peter, you're making me hungry. Thanks for calling.
It's about lunchtime, yeah.
Joe in Kenosha. Hi.
Boy, how are you making me hungry? I'm telling you, I'm heading to work and I'm starved. Anyway, I wanted to ask you, are the thinner stalks, like asparagus thinner, more flavorful than the ones that have gotten thicker?
I haven't found a difference. And I know some varieties themselves, you know, the stalks are just these muscular things. And some do have a mix of thin and thick. You know, like to my taste buds, there's no difference. It's partly how much chopping do you want to do? The skinny ones, you can just go chop, 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 chop. The big ones, you might have to slice and chop.
Mm. Yeah, well, I definitely want to get your book. I'm also an avid gardener, and I like to take the leaves after they've been chopped off and put them upside down over grass that you don't want to grow or weeds that you don't want to grow because it blocks the sunlight terrifically, and it keeps it down.
Oh, perfect.
Good
mulch.
Idea.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, it kind of. I don't know if it poisons the grass or just blocks the sun, but it does the job.
Yeah.
Well, there is that, you know, talk of, you know, rhubarb's toxic leaves. And I know we were counseled as kids, don't eat the leaves, don't eat the leaves. And, you know, to the point where I thought, oh, my gosh, this is going to level a congregation if it ever got out.
Right. And I got a neighbor of mine who's got it growing wild, and mine's growing wild behind my garage. I used to have, one marriage ago, I used to have a really big garden of rhubarb, and I never knew any way to make rhubarb except for rhubarb pie and rhubarb strawberry pie. But now that I've heard you on the show, I'm like, oh, my gosh, it sounds so good.
You need this book.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks a lot for calling. Kay in Marshfield. Hi.
Yes. The lady that wondered about her container of rhubarb and how much could she cut. We have always pulled our rhubarb, not cut it off down low. What about your guest speaker here?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, good
pull
point.
Or cut?
I always pull. I'm guessing perhaps in a container there might not be quite as much, you know, earth to hold it fast. I know some people are concerned that cutting it may open it up to, you know, bacteria.
Disease or whatever.
Disease. You know, I haven't had that experience, but, you know, I would err on the side of caution by pulling it if possible. So I agree.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you for calling. And Phyllis in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling because rhubarb causes a lot of intestinal flatulence. And I wonder if there are recipes in our guest book that would lessen that.
How to prevent gas while eating.
Oh, gosh. Well, I don't have any rhubarb bean recipes. You know, I think, I mean, it's true. Rhubarb does have some intestinal ramifications if you eat a lot. I know at one point during the recipe testing phase of this, when I would maybe have three different rhubarb dishes for a meal, I can speak to that. But I think it's, you know, moderation in all things, but all things. I imagine some people may be even more receptive to this.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't take a lot of rhubarb. You probably maybe don't want two pieces of pie, but you can certainly have, you know, a shrimp in kimonos.
There you go. We had a Facebook comment from Steven who says there's a local brewery here in Rolling Stone, Minnesota, takes their ale, a honey wheat ale, and ages it on rhubarb. It's a great combination. It's sweet and tart when fresh. And after it ages a few months, the sweetness drops off and the tartness of the rhubarb becomes strong.
Oh, I'm going to have to find this. That sounds amazing.
Well, brewery in Rolling Stone, Minnesota.
Stone, Minnesota? Oh.
I'm not sure where Rolling Stone is.
I know there are also bitters There's a company in Rochester, New York, Fees Brothers, and they make all sorts of aromatic bitters. And one of their more popular varieties are rhubarb bitters. Kind of an acquired taste. I'm not completely sold on it, but I applaud the experimentation.
We have a Facebook comment from Karen. Could you explain how to roast rhubarb? Is it like the process for beets or asparagus?
Just as simple as that. I think of asparagus or beets as of rolling them in a little oil. I avoid the oil. In fact, throughout the entire book, I've really been very minimal in my use of fats and oils. But when I roast, I just put it in a small pan with a little maybe maple syrup, herbs, and maybe a little cayenne pepper for a savory treatment. To roast it on a sweet direction, just the cut rhubarb sprinkled with some confectioner sugar and put that in a hot oven for about 20 minutes. Sugar kind of starts to caramelize. The rhubarb cooks down. Easy as pie, as they say.
I was wondering, for beets, for example, they're great on the grill. With other vegetables, you grill the beets, and the flavors become so intense. Have you grilled the asparagus?
I tried grilling some rhubarb.
Rhubarb. Yeah.
Yeah. It seemed to.
It didn't work.
Well, it got a little soft. It got a little soft too fast. It doesn't have asparagus's essential, backbone.
Okay.
But I'm going to keep trying.
Steve in Montreal, Wisconsin. Hi.
Good afternoon, Larry. Hey, all this talk about this wonderful things you can do with rhubarb. Nobody, to my knowledge, has said anything about rhubarb wine. I was in Firelands Winery in Sandusky, Ohio, where I buy some of my wines. They do a lot of fruit wine, and they had one bottle of rhubarb left. And, of course, I bought it. And it's been some time ago, and I don't remember it that well, except if I had another crack, I'd sure buy some more of it. But rhubarb wine, give it a mention, please.
I do have a recipe for my grandmother's rhubarb wine in the book. I think, I grew up in farm country in South Dakota, and I think every housewife had a big bucket of rhubarb wine going down in the basement. It takes a tremendous amount of sugar. And so I think how dear that must have been to them as, sugar prices ebbed and flowed. It also takes a tremendous amount of rhubarb. And I just learned from my sister, who, thank goodness, is carrying on the tradition. She had heard that if you wait to cut the rhubarb until after it's gone to seed, it is perhaps a less sweet product in the end, and she did this last year. We just opened a bottle. I was home a few weeks ago, and it's a good wine. So my new tip is to wait until after it's gone to seed.
There you go.
Be that as it may, another use for that wonderful plant.
Absolutely.
And David in Green Bay. Hello.
Hi, Larry. I've got a little factoid here that might interest you and your guest.
Please.
I know you're a gardening nut, and as I am. And a few years ago, my son lived in a city in England called Harrogate, Horrogate, I believe. And they have a garden that's now a Royal Horticulture Garden called Harlow Carr. And they have the national plant collection of rhubarb, which surprised me at the time. I just finally looked them up on the net, and they've got 130 taxa. It's the only only plant that is there for commercial purposes or for eating rather than for decoration.
Wow! And here we are. I wish we had more time to talk about that. We're about out of time.
Oh, my goodness.
Kim, boy, did this 45 minutes fly, didn't it? Your book, Rhubarb Renaissance, I really enjoy it. I'll be trying, Renee and I will be trying some of your recipes out in the very near future. I can tell you that. It's been a wonderful pleasure talking with you. I hope we can do it again.
Oh, it's been so much fun. Thanks, Larry.
I really appreciate it. Kim Odie, and her last name is spelled O-D-E, by the way. Kim Odie has written Rhubarb Renaissance. Should be available pretty much anywhere. And she's a great guest, and she had some wonderful recipes. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.